CNN spent just 3 minutes in a 3-hour debate on Joe Biden's alleged wrongdoing in Ukraine, and ABC tried to use footage from a Kentucky gun range to attack Trump's Syria withdrawal. I'm Amber Athey, and this is Unfit to Print. Hey y'all, welcome to this week's episode of Unfit to Print. As always, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube, SoundCloud, and iTunes channels so that you're always up to date when we drop a new episode of the podcast. As always, Unfit to Print is brought to you by Printed Kicks, and particularly their Hometown Heroes line. They've got a bunch of great pro police gear like this Thin Blue Line t-shirt, as well as all of their other pro-military, Second Amendment, and hunting gear. They're also running a special promotion for Daily Caller viewers. Just use the promo code CALLER for 20% off at checkout, and you will get access to all of their great Made in America products. Once again, y'all, the media is freaking out about memes. This time, a violent meme that was picked from a movie and showed Trump attacking members of the media and political opponents. The meme in question was from the movie Kingsman, which, if you've seen it, has this really violent scene showing one of the main characters, a spy, attacking people in a church in the United States in Kentucky. And basically the premise of the story is that the spy can't control himself because of some high-tech gadget. But point being, Carpe Donctum decided to remake the meme by putting logos of news outlets, faces of politicians over the people in the church, and then having Trump being the person actually attacking them. So it goes on for a few minutes. It shows Trump doing things like shooting them in the head, stabbing them, very aggressive, very violent, what have you. But it's a meme, right? So it's not real violence. It's very cartoonish. It's not very well edited. And we've seen this before in the past where Trump was photoshopped into the Top Gun movie, for example, and shown shooting down various news outlets. So there's some precedent for this. This video apparently came out a year ago. And yet the media is up in arms because it was apparently shown at a pro-Trump conference at his resort in Miami. Now this conference is called American Priority Festival. There were some big name speakers there like Don Jr., I believe Charlie Kirk was there, a bunch of Turning Point USA people. But the video was not shown on the main stage and in fact wasn't even sanctioned by the conference organizers. This video was apparently shown in a side room that was meant to be some type of meme exhibit and was showing all different types of memes created by Carpe Donctum. This happened to be one playing at a small screen in the corner. And of course, someone leaked this to the New York Times. Maggie Haberman wrote up this breathless piece about how this is inspiring violence against journalists and how Trump's rhetoric is going to put everyone's lives in danger. Pretty wild to suggest that a meme could cause violence, but that's where we are nowadays. Now, what's interesting is that the room that this was played in was apparently empty for almost the entirety of the conference. There was a Reason reporter, CJ Ciaramella, apologies if I mispronounced your last name, he was down there at the festival covering it as a reporter, went into this meme room, took a video, and there was not a single other person in it. By all other eyewitness accounts, this room had no more than a dozen people in it at one time, and apparently no one can remember even seeing this video. So it's pretty crazy to think that a video seen by less than a dozen people across an entire festival could possibly be inciting people to violence or radicalizing them. Now, I think it's especially funny that the media would pull this line about a meme inciting violence, considering all of the violent rhetoric that they themselves have directed at the president. There's a long history of this. I've documented this multiple times over and over again, perhaps most notably because the New York Times was the one that published this piece about the meme down in Miami. The New York Times, less than a year ago, in October of 2018, published a Trump assassination fantasy piece, an opinion piece where the writer literally was deciding how he thought the Mueller probe was going to play out, and it ended in the assassination of the president. The New York Times thought that was appropriate to publish, and that apparently wouldn't incite left-wing violence, yet somehow a meme is inciting violence against journalists. There's a ton of other examples. MSNBC's Nicole Wallace saying that she wanted to wring the neck of White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. She also said at one point that if she were Jeb Bush, she would punch Donald Trump in the face. And CNN guest Rick Wilson told a fellow Trump supporter that he would gut him like a fish. A Politico reporter called Trump supporters garbage people with bad teeth. And the comparisons go on and on and on. You'll remember, of course, the media accused Trump of having concentration camps on the border, basically comparing him to a Nazi. All types of things that are hateful, could inspire violence if you think that political rhetoric can do that. And yet there seems to be this blatant hypocrisy with the media never checking their own language against the president and his officials, even encouraging people to go out and confront them in public at restaurants to kick them out of places that they like to go. And yet when there is a meme that is just a joke, all of a sudden it's a big deal and everyone needs to run for their lives. So that's the media for you. CNN hosted its second Democratic presidential debate this week, and the bias was ripe for the picking. It all started when Anderson Cooper, one of the moderators of the debate, decided to finally ask former Vice President Joe Biden about his alleged wrongdoing in pressuring Ukraine to fire a prosecutor that was looking into a company that employed his son, Hunter Biden. But look at how he framed the question.
The impeachment inquiry is centered on President Trump's attempts to get political dirt from Ukraine on Vice President Biden and his son, Hunter. Mr. Vice President, President Trump has falsely accused your son of doing something wrong while serving on a company board in Ukraine. I want to point out there's no evidence of wrongdoing by either one of you. Having said that, on Sunday, you announced that if you're president, no one in your family or associated with you will be involved in any foreign businesses. My question is, if it's not okay for a president's family to be involved in foreign businesses, why was it okay for your son when you were vice president?
It may be unsubstantiated that Biden specifically asked Ukraine to fire this prosecutor in order to protect Hunter Biden and the company that he was on the board of, Burisma. But how can we say it's false when we haven't even had an investigation? And in fact, as soon as President Trump asked for an investigation into that, he was met with cries for impeachment. He had Democrats in the media saying that he had acted unethically and that he needed to be removed from office because he was trying to meddle in the 2020 election. And if Anderson Cooper really thinks that this story is false, then why would he ask Biden about it in the first place? Why would he even want an answer to something that he believes has already been proven to be false? It makes no sense. So CNN basically decided we have to ask Biden this question because if we don't, everyone, especially conservative media, is going to be coming after us for it and we're going to get dinged. So they decided that they were going to ask about it in the most benign way possible. So first, they started out the question with the premise that the theory is false. Two, they spent only 3 minutes on it during a three-hour debate. And three, they didn't let any other candidate respond to the allegations against Biden, despite the fact that some of them have already said they wouldn't let their own child serve on the board of a foreign company if they were serving as president because they think that it would be inappropriate. So all around, CNN did their absolute best to cover up this issue and put it to bed as much as possible. But clearly, we have still not gotten real answers. And in fact, when Biden was answering Anderson Cooper's question, he told another lie. He said that he never spoke to Hunter Biden about his position with Burisma. And we know that's false because earlier that morning before the debate, Hunter said in an interview on Good Morning America that he had had a brief conversation with his father about serving on the board of Burisma. So any moderator worth his salt in that debate would have followed up with Biden and asked him to explain the fact that he keeps offering misstatements and mistruths about what actually happened with his son's role in Ukraine and why he fired that prosecutor. But this is CNN, so, you know, we can't ask for much. This is the best we get, is just totally covered up questions and not even spending time on one of the biggest news stories of the past couple of weeks. In addition to this Joe Biden nonsense, one bright spot of the actual debate moderators was that they repeatedly pressed Elizabeth Warren on whether or not she would raise taxes on the middle class in order to pay for her Medicare for All and other plans that she's proposed if she becomes president. Elizabeth Warren has completely refused to answer this question. Instead, her response is always about the cost overall and the fact that she believes they would go down for middle-class families, but she doesn't mention that their taxes would in fact go up. Now, what's interesting about her answer is that Senator Bernie Sanders is totally honest and open about the fact that he would raise taxes on the middle class to pay for his programs, and Elizabeth Warren seemingly can't do the same. But if you were reading Twitter after the debate, you would see that a bunch of left-wing journalists were covering for Elizabeth Warren and suggesting that it was inappropriate for journalists to even ask her this question. it was inappropriate and messed up their credibility for them to want Elizabeth Warren to be honest about the fact that she's going to have to charge middle-class families more in order to pay for her programs. Margaret Sullivan in the Washington Post wrote, "Journalists are kindly doing President Trump's work for him when they insist on trying to pin down Senator Elizabeth Warren, the new frontrunner, to declare she'd raise taxes to fund Medicare for all. Of course, it's legitimate to dig into the cost, but not in a way that creates a nice GOP campaign ad and misses the larger lens of overall costs." Another Post columnist, Paul Waldman, argued the only problem with her answer was that while she rejects the premise of the tax question, it would be even better if she explained why it's important to reject the premise of the tax question. So according to these very stunning and brave journalists, you're not allowed to ask politicians tough questions if it could lead to a campaign ad for the other party. But I thought that we were told that journalists don't root for sides. Well, it seems like that is the case, unless it is in fact their frontrunner in the Democratic presidential primary that is the one that needs to be asked questions. I, for one, think it's totally reasonable that if your opponent can admit something and you personally can't, then we need to understand why exactly you're being dishonest about the issue. But again, Elizabeth Warren has already become the media's new favorite. She's their darling. She's their frontrunner. She won one poll and all of a sudden she was lifted above Joe Biden because the media doesn't want to talk about his ties with Ukraine. There were several outlets who, after the debate, falsely attributed a Bernie Sanders quote to Elizabeth Warren. NBC News, Intelligencer, Boston.com, all of these outlets took a straight-up Bernie Sanders quote and claimed that Warren said it. The quote is, "I get a little bit tired, I must say, of people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel, et cetera, et cetera." Watch the video.
You want to respond?
I get a little bit tired, I must say. Are people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel? 87 million uninsured, 30,000 people dying every single year, 500,000 people going bankrupt. For what reason? They came down with cancer. I will tell you what the issue is here. The issue is whether the Democratic Party has the guts to stand up to the healthcare industry, which made $100 billion in profit. Whether we have the guts to stand up to the corrupt, price-fixing pharmaceutical industry, which is charging us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. And if we don't have the guts to do that, if all we can do is take their money, we should be ashamed about that.
Thank you, Senator.
Now, I know Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are both relatively elderly people, but one is a man, one is a woman, one has gray hair, one is blonde, one wears colorful blazers, the other one wears shirts with the sleeves rolled up. Not the same person at all, and yet somehow all three of these outlets decided that this quote belonged to Elizabeth Warren. Seems a little suspect. Now, they corrected it and apologized, but it's pretty bad for you to watch a debate and pull an entire two-sentence quote and attribute it to the wrong person. There's just no excuse for that. So the media and the establishment, who both seem to really love war, and specifically regime change wars, went after Trump this week for deciding to pull U.S. troops from northern Syria. Now, obviously, there's a huge conflict there between Turkey and the Kurds, and the media immediately went after Trump for apparently abandoning the Kurdish allies and leading to a Turkish invasion of Syria. Immediately after Trump announced the troop withdrawal, there was in fact an invasion of Syria by Turkey, which they have been wanting to do for a very long time. Never mind Trump's withdrawal. And ABC News decided to demonstrate that point by showing this really awful clip of bombings in Syria. Watch.
This video, obtained by ABC News, appears to show the fury of the Turkish attack on the border town of Tal Abyad, a border town bombarded by Turkey's military.
This video right here appearing to show Turkey's military bombing Kurd civilians in a Syrian border town. The Kurds, who fought alongside the U.S. against ISIS. Now, horrific reports of atrocities committed by Turkish-backed fighters on those very allies.
Except that video is not actually from Syria. That video is from a gun range in Kentucky from 2017. I know that's probably shocking to ABC because they would be freaked out by the fact that stuff like that's even allowed to happen at a gun range. But their whole narrative of these bombings taking place on the Kurds was totally blown apart when they used this fake news video. The gun range, which is called Knob Creek Gun Range, it's in Kentucky, actually confirmed that this video was from their range in 2017. ABC later apologized, or I guess kind of apologized, and corrected it in a tweet, but they still haven't issued a correction on air. And this video aired on their two biggest news programs, World News Tonight and Good Morning America. So you would think that they should issue an on-air correction so that anyone who saw the original video would not be confused as to what they were watching. But again, that's too much to hope for with these establishment news outlets. Continuing on the trend of attacking Trump for his Syria withdrawal, a bunch of news outlets were basically acting like the Kurds were our perfect allies. And to be fair, the Kurds worked with the US in eliminating ISIS and fought alongside each other. But as Trump said, they're no angels. And he's right about that. The Kurds have committed terror attacks against Turkey. That's just a fact. They've been trying to hold on to this territory in northern Syria. Turkey wants to take it over. And the two have been fighting for a really long time. And there's really no explanation that you can get from the media or the establishment as to why exactly U.S. troops are supposed to be there. They've pointed to the fact that ISIS detainees could be released, and I think that's a fair point. But as to the rest of it, no one can really explain why U.S. presence makes sense in that area. What exactly are we gaining from being in that region? It's a very complicated situation. In addition to the Kurds being our allies in the fight against ISIS, Turkey is in NATO. And so we can't just go in and start attacking Turkey. We would have to somehow get them removed from NATO before we did that, or we would be in violation of international treaties. The media and establishment politicians on Capitol Hill, of course, were claiming that this was going to lead to a slaughter of the Kurds. But look at what just happened. Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just announced a ceasefire with Turkey, meaning Turkey will suspend their military operations, allowing the Kurdish forces the opportunity to leave the safe zone and avoid any further combat. They also, out of this deal, got, which was a lot of people's concern, was Turkey is going to agree to cooperate with the United States in detaining individuals from ISIS, and in exchange, the U.S. will drop sanctions on Turkey. So it's obviously not a perfect resolution to the problem because the Kurdish forces have to give up some of their ground in Syria, but overall, it's a lot better than I think most people would have hoped for. And do I think that Trump's initial withdrawal should have been more planned out? Yes, I do, but overall, I'm just really skeptical of this media establishment Washington, D.C. narrative that we always need to have our finger in every pie in foreign policy. And they never can explain what exactly being involved in these various situations is going to get for the American people. And Trump came into office promising to get people out of endless wars, promising to put America first, particularly in foreign policy. And that's what he's doing again in this serious situation. And so until someone can explain to me what exactly we were doing, arbitrating disputes between the Kurds and the Turks anyway, then I'm pretty happy with how all of this turned out, honestly. Megyn Kelly made her first television appearance in over a year on Fox News' Tucker Carlson Tonight. And of course, Tucker Carlson is a co-founder of The Daily Caller, so we are very fond of him here. And I myself am a pretty decent fan of Megyn Kelly. She left NBC News about a year ago, has not been on television since. There was a huge scandal surrounding her claim that blackface didn't used to be that inappropriate in Halloween costumes. She left Fox News over 2 years ago, so this is her first time on Fox News in over 2 years. And she talked about a topic that we love on this show, media bias.
Fox News was founded all, you know, 1996, right? They just had their birthday on the premise that the other side of the stories weren't being told and that half of the country was being ignored and that if you did fair and balanced news, the people would watch. And there was a premise that the other media, the mainstream media, maybe they weren't far left, right? But that there was a baked-in bias against people who believe in homeschooling, who believe in a pro-life position who might have a gun, right? And so they made a whole empire based on programming to those people. I think what's happened now on the other half of the country, on sort of the mainstream, is they've embraced it. It was sort of passive, and now it's active. Now it's, let's work. He's too bad. We have to work together.
Right.
We'll be judged. History will judge us as whether we were for or against this man.
Now, I think Megan is absolutely right that the media has gone from passive to active bias against President Trump. It seems to me that in past administrations, the media was biased and they were unfair towards these figures. But in Trump, it seems that they've expressed this duty to actually have reporting that will get him removed from office or prevent his reelection. Megan's very talented at TV, and I'm really glad to see her back. I hope that she will continue with takes like this. And hey, maybe she'll have another show again soon. That was this week's episode of Unfit to Print. Thank you all, as always, for watching, and we will see you next week.